Game on.
Game on.
2FM.
And a very good evening from Damien O'Mara. You are very welcome to Wednesday's Game On. Busy programme between now and 8 o'clock. Old Trafford plays host to Champions League football tonight. Manchester United and PSV Eindhoven in Group B of the competition. It is the feature game on RTE2 television. Jim Beglin is there for us. We will hear from him very shortly. We're going to have the latest on this ongoing saga that is Sebastian Coe's tenure as the president of the IAAF. Fresh questions for him to answer over the past 24 hours. All of that before Dick Pound from WADA implied that a second report from WADA due in January is going to be even more damaging to the IAAF than what we heard a couple of weeks back. More on that in just a second. We will also chat to the man who is hoping to become Ireland's representative in diving at next summer's Olympic Games in Rio. Trainer Gordon Elliott is a guest, as is teenage jockey sensation Jack Kennedy. 51552 at Game On 2FM will get us on the old Twitter machine. Alan Cawley, good evening.
Evening, Damien. How are you?
I'm all right. I won't lie to you. I had slight concerns about an hour ago that the voice might not hold up for the full hour.
No, you're fine. You sound good to me.
I gave it a lash in terms of singing and screaming and everything else.
It brought you back to your youth.
Well, I'm not that old a man, Alan.
Well, I know, but like...
You know, I'm like...
But when was the last time you would have roared at a concert, maybe like you did last night?
Oh, a long time ago.
Well, there you go.
Long
That's what
time
I mean.
Ago. I don't get to concerts.
No, exactly. So it was probably...
I'm too tight, generally.
And I've seen you all day waxing lyrical about it.
Well, I tell you now...
On the old Twitter machine.
If you are even remotely a fan of U2, and you get a chance to see them... I don't want people thinking, oh, there's that arsehole on the radio, got his tickets for free. I bought me tickets, €108 for last night.
Why are you always so cynical?
Because that's what... I guarantee I'm getting in there before the texts and tweets.
No.
I'm paying €190 to go see them on Friday. I actually expect to be tuning the Edge's guitar on Friday evening. But
you're going again?
Yeah.
Twice?
Yeah.
I don't get this.
I had the offer of a ticket on Monday, and I wasn't going to be able to get to the point in time, so I had to turn down a ticket Monday. So I would have gone three nights.
But what about the likes of the person who would love to have gone one night, and you're taking up three nights?
But sure, I'm paying me money.
I know, and that's fine, but I don't get the whole three night thing.
But they do different songs every night. It's not like stuff you'd go to now, like One Direction or Rihanna or something, where it's the same show every night and she has like Dublin written on her hand and goes, "Good evening, Dublin."
Is it different set lists every night?
Yeah.
I didn't know.
I wasn't at it Monday, but they finished, say, with One on Monday. They finished last night with Bad into 40, and I was getting ready to leave. There was a woman in floods of tears in the point last night. I can't believe they're playing Bad.
How old?
I would say probably mid-40s. I can't believe I'm in Dublin and you two are playing Bad.
She's stunt, yeah.
Yeah.
The less said, the better
so
about
anyway,
that.
So we'll move on. You two.
I know, but I heard it's an amazing show, yeah. And to get a bit of a raw deal in Ireland and Dublin, and I just don't get that either.
See, we're just a nation of begrudgers.
Legends, absolute legends.
Between that and, we might talk later on in the programme, the reviews are out for the new Rocky film, which... For a man of 34 years of age, I'm far too excited by the reviews of the new Rocky.
No, just give me the old ones, the original.
51552 at Game On 2FM. So we will chat about all that and much more. Jim Beglin to come, diving to come, when diving not of a footballing nature.
Why look at me when you see that?
Because it's the first thing, when you give out about people diving anywhere else, it's the first. I wasn't even here on Monday and I got tweets complaining about you talking about people diving.
Me?
Yeah.
So we're talking tonight about real diving.
Like speedos.
Yeah. Proper
board,
divers.
Tom Daly. Think of Tom Daly.
Talented boys.
Think of Splash on ITV.
Talented boys.
And all of that to come. But we are going to begin with athletics, this ongoing saga around the presidency of Sebastian Coe with the IAAF and his suitability for the role and his connections to Nike and his connections to all sorts of other things. And it hasn't been the greatest 24, 48 hours for Lord Coe, to give him his full title. Martin Ziegler, Chief Sports Writer with the Press Association as well as Martin. How are you?
I'm good, Damien. How's it going?
I'm not too bad. I'm considerably better than I think Sebastian Coe will be over the last couple of days. This is a news cycle that is just not showing any sign of relenting for Sebastian Coe. We had the situation with the emergence of emails between himself and a leading Nike official about Eugene being the host venue for championships. And since then, fresh revelations about public money in the UK financing his bid to become IAAF president.
Yeah, that's right. So it turns out that the UK government, the agency UK Sport, provided £63,000 to help him in his campaign, paying for basically for public relations consultants. which is it's something which is they've done before. They did it with Brian Cookson at the International Cycling Union. So it's not something which is unprecedented. But at the same time, it does raise questions. You know, is this a good use of taxpayers' money? To when you think, you know, Sebco is getting paid quite a considerable amount on the lecture circuit, and of course from Nike too, something like £100,000 a year, which is probably, I think, is generally accepted. There's nobody I've spoken to who actually thinks that he should maintain this connection. Everybody you talk to thinks he should sever ties right now.
On that, he has made a sequence of fairly vacuous statements in response to the issues that have emerged over the course of the last couple of weeks. Now, I understand he has to appear in front of a select committee in the House of Commons on the 2nd of December, but is he guilty or is he ill-advised not to more publicly fight back against what is emerging, and maybe fight back or clarify what's emerging into the media?
I think what's happened with the whole Nike issue is Sebco sold his company to another company called CSM, Sports and Marketing. So they basically bought all his revenue, i.e. all his income from his sponsorship deals, his speech making, his newspaper columns, everything, so that they kind of bought the rights to that. So I actually think that Coe's main trouble is he's basically in contractual handcuffs. He cannot get rid of Nike because actually he sold the rights to that, and it's people not involved with him are the ones who are sort of calling the shots, and I think he's actually finding it quite difficult to extricate himself from it. I think he will be able to do it, and I wouldn't be surprised if he does announce something before December the 2nd, otherwise he's going to be given a really serious grilling by MPs. Mm.
But then to add to that, Dick Pound, we had the Water report very recently. We had Dick Pound in the media overnight talking about the second phase of that report being even more damaging to the IAAF and the leadership of the IAAF. Is that the single biggest challenge that will eventually, you know, face Coe, because he's a vice president since 2007, re-elected in 2011, re-elected as president this year, that he has been a part of that leadership group going back quite some year?
I think the trouble is a lot of people knew that the people around Lamine Diack, his predecessor, were a bit dodgy. There was, even back in December, we had Diack's son. He resigned. We had Diack's advisor, Habib Cisse, he was forced to resign. We had the Russian treasurer of the IAAF resign. So everybody knew that those things were slightly dodgy. So for Coe to come out, for example, in August and praise Lamine Diack for being his mentor, and this is the guy who's now been arrested in France for basically taking millions of euros and bribes to cover up doping. For him to have been quite so naive anyway, is probably not a good thing. It's certainly not a good thing. I think that's partly why the pressure's there. And this is what the second part of the report is going to reveal. Dick Pound, he didn't reveal that because he passed it all to the French police. This is very much what the IAAF leadership knew, what they were up to. Coe is not implicated, I'm sure, in that report. But on the other hand, as you say, he was close to Diack. Diack helped London get the Olympics. He's said lots of nice things about him. And people are now saying, is this the right person to lead international athletics? I think for somebody who had such a reputation of winning London the Olympics and then staging the games, his whole reputation has taken a serious knock.
And you've brought on to what I wanted to ask you next. Where does he now exist in the standing or in the hearts of the British sporting people? How damaging realistically has this been to the guy that was the figurehead for athletics for so many years and the guy that brought what people say were the greatest modern Olympics to London?
I think it's quite serious, actually, because it's the whole doping issue is something that really hits at the heart of athletics. And if people, Sebco has always made a song and dance about he wants lifetime bans for dopers, and he's always stood up for the clean athlete. So if for people to start now thinking that this guy was actually not taking it very seriously and turning a blind eye to misdeeds by other people at the IAAF, then that's a serious knock. So I think he will be awaiting the second part of Dick Pound's report with some trepidation.
Just to finish, obviously there's the Select Committee appearance. There will be these fresh revelations about the IAAF in January. Do you expect him to come out fighting when he appears in the Commons on the 2nd of December? Or, you know, can we expect a big public defence of his situation, his current obligations to people?
If I was advising him, I would say sever your links with Nike before then. And then, otherwise, because it's very difficult to defend the indefensible. And they will go for him, that's for sure. If he hasn't done it by then it's a big chink in his armour. The IAAF thing, the doping scandal sort of things, I think he can probably fight his own corner much easier on that. When it's something personal about himself and his business connections and the conflicts of interest, that's much more difficult. I wouldn't be surprised if before next Wednesday something happens on that score.
Okay, we'll wait and see. Martin, good to talk to you. Thanks for joining us.
Okay, see you later.
Martin Ziegler joining us there. Have you been following?
I have, yeah. It's the last thing athletics needs at the moment, with obviously the doping stuff. Yeah. And then for the man who they want to try and clean all that up has his own kind of stuff going on in the background as well, doesn't really help things.
Yeah, but it comes back to the relationship, not just between individuals and big corporate entities, but the relationship between sports and big corporate entities. Mm. Like, you know, the whole
thing.
Well,
we've seen it with FIFA, didn't we?
Well, like, even you look beyond that, like there's a brilliant, brilliant book written by a woman called Barbara Smith about the history of Adidas and Puma. You know, the two guys who headed up, like Adi Dassler and Rudy Dassler were brothers and had a falling out, and Rudy set up Puma and Adi Dassler obviously kept going with the family business, which was Adidas. And in that, they talk about the relationship between FIFA and Adidas and the early World Cup. So if you watch the 1966 World Cup final, like the German team all had like three stripes painted onto their boots, the Adidas logo, even though there was a ban in place on, you know, advertising and endorsement. So, you know, this isn't fresh. The
it's
relationship
back
between
even then.
Like Nike and athletics and Adidas and football. And, you know, he who pays the piper picks the tune. Well, so if Nike are putting the amount of money in,
I was going to say, the companies of that stature, Damien, and the money that they're ploughing into it,
are you entitled to question if something should come to your home city?
Well, that's, yeah, I don't know.
Different day, different argument for a different day.
But yeah, he's not helping himself at the moment. As Martin says there, he needs to sever ties if he's serious about, obviously, and whether he'll do that or not, because isn't he being paid a wage by them?
By Nike?
Yeah.
100 grand a year.
Yeah.
And apparently, the IAAF presidency is an unsalaried position. That's yet to be officially clarified, but it's suggested that Lamine Diack, who was the IAAF president, never officially took a salary, but had, you know, company cars and villas and access to loads of other stuff. So, come here, if we knew half of what goes on,
well, sure, there you go.
In a lot of places.
I'm sure them fellas are well looked after. Unsalary jobs. Give me a break.
We will talk about Manchester United against PSV Eindhoven in just a second with Jim Beglin. Paddy McNair on the bench for United tonight, which continues that connection between Manchester United, Ireland, Manchester United, the United Academy. And I suppose it's poignant that there's Paddy McNair on the week that, or the night that Old Trafford will pay tribute to George Best.
Yeah, I've seen a lot of the stuff in social media today about Best. It's hard to believe it's 10 years.
I didn't
think it was 10 years.
I remember, you know, it's strange how you make connections to things.
I remember the funeral, sitting watching it, everything.
I remember, having waxed lyrical about you two, here's all my credibility gone. I was at Smithfield on ice skating. Well, walking around the ice.
I don't think you should have said that.
I know, yeah. And I remember going into Subway in Smithfield.
You've ruined it all.
Other sandwich bars are available. And
people are listening thinking, there he is, Bono's number one, yeah, number one buddy, and then you go and ruin it all with ice skating.
He's actually Paul to me, you know. I remember
Northsiders.
Yeah, us Northsiders, we all stick together. And I remember like Subway having the funeral on in the television, and people crowded around a little small television in Smithfield.
I sat at home and watched it for hours.
Yeah, Brian Kennedy, you raised me up.
It was amazing. It was so emotional. Yeah. And just see that he went miles through Belfast and obviously on to where he was buried. But 10 years, I never thought it was 10 years.
Yeah. Anyway, Champions League. Manchester City away to Juventus in Group D of the competition tonight. They've already qualified for the knockout stages. They can advance as group winners with victory tonight. Joe Hart, Bakary, Sanya, Di Michaelis, Otamendi, Clichy across the back. Fernando, Toure, Fernandinho in midfield. Jesus Navas, De Bruyne on the wings. Aguero up front. The United team, David De Gea, Marcus Rojo. Do you like the way I did that? Memphis, Anthony Martial, Wayne Rooney, Chris Smalling, Daley Blint, Schneiderlin, Schweinsteiger, Jesse Lindegaard, who, like, I don't want to go back into, like, Matteo Darmian is the other player starting. I don't want to go back into Roy Hodgson giving out caps like they're snuffed awake. But do you buy into?
No.
Do you buy into Lindegaard?
Not at all.
See, now I wonder will. Yeah, Dele Alli.
Dele Alli looks promising, but Lindegaard, he hasn't done much for me yet.
Yeah. I hope the lads at
Flatters to deceive
abuse you as much as they.
Yeah, well, as you said, me. Getting called up for England and that stuff is nonsense to me. Well, but when you think of the players over the years who only picked up a handful of caps, some players didn't even get caps.
How many caps would Matt Le Tissier have for England now? Steve Bruce.
Steve Bruce never got a cap.
Never got a cap.
Yeah.
The only way he'll get a cap is on eBay.
Yeah, when you see some of them that are playing now, but Lingard, yeah, people are going on about him, and obviously your man seems to like him, Van Gaal, but I'm yet to be convinced.
Manchester United's meeting with, if we say it properly, PSV Eindhoven is the feature game on RT2 television tonight. Jim Beglin will be alongside George Hamilton for commentary of the game. When you look at the dynamic of the group, United will presumably want to get their business done and get qualified. PSV obviously want to keep their hopes alive. So to use that dreadful cliche, no quarter given at Old Trafford tonight.
No, I would agree with that. I think it's up to Manchester United maybe to give us a little bit more, because what we got against Wolfsburg was not convincing, and it was pretty much the same against CSKA in Moscow. A lot of possession with not the potency you would expect. That's still the criticism for Manchester United, and I'm sure it'll be an issue again tonight, because I would expect PSV for large spells of the game to get bodies behind the ball. And I saw their games in both Wolfsburg and indeed Moscow, and little lack of ambition. I think they have to show more tonight, PSV. They have to come out and play more and show more of a threat, because for me they were a bit docile in those two games. They've won their home games, they've lost away. They've got to come up with something different.
How formidable a place is Old Trafford to go to on European nights now compared to what it might have been when Sir Alex Ferguson was there?
Well, I think it's still a very impressive arena, Theatre of Dreams. It's I think for visiting players, it might still be kind of, you know, very large scale and obviously a bit more to take in. But I don't think it's especially daunting. I don't think it's like the Fergie years when basically Manchester United just ripped into whomever came here, most of the time at least. You don't quite get that now. I think this Manchester United side can give you a chance to settle into a game. And I think from that viewpoint, I think visiting sides here are not as intimidated as they once might have been.
So then when you look at the options that Louis van Gaal has at his disposal, particularly at the back, and you know the threat that PSV can pose, it sounds like you do fancy that the Eredivisie team could get a result tonight, depending on how they go about their business.
To be honest, I mean, looking at it, I think Manchester United will probably scramble a victory. I mean, I'm not expecting it to be especially convincing, but I think Manchester United have enough to get over the line against this PSV very young side. So I'm not really expecting too much from PSV. I think their attitude has to change in terms of showing more in the opposition half. But as to whether they can do that, that's another thing, Damien. I think... We need to find out tonight from PSV whether they have another gear to go into, because I haven't seen it yet, certainly not on their travels in the Champions League. So I would think Manchester United, with especially the returnees, he's got Rooney, Martial. You mentioned them maybe a bit weak defensively. Manchester United have got an excellent defensive record. I think that's the big change from last season, whereas early on last season he was all over the place, whether to play a back four or back three, and Manchester United didn't really know what they were doing. He sorted all that out, and if anything has been strong this season for United, it's their defence.
Okay, overall, like, this criticism of Van Gaal that it's not attractive football. Now, you know, realistically, if it's functional football and you're winning, what more can you realistically want? But when you look at how he's deploying his team and putting his team out there, is he fully maximising the ability that he has within the squad in terms of attractive football, stylish football, or is that relevant at all?
I think it is relevant. I think a lot of it initially went back to criticism to Sir Alex Ferguson's time. I mean, he set the bar here for excitement and entertainment and the style of play. And I think everybody was making that comparison. That's only natural. I suppose it's inevitable. I think there is justification in some of the criticism. I just think it's a little over the top, because look at Manchester United's position now. They're second in the Premier League, and if they do win tonight, they're in the last 16 of the Champions League. So they're obviously getting something right in terms of results. Mm. It's the way they're going about the results. They're not blowing teams away. They're nicking games, and they're kind of creeping over the line. Routine wins are not the norm for Manchester United at the moment, and they'd love that to change tonight. Wouldn't they just love a routine win tonight? So, yeah, I appreciate that it's all possession-based for Van Gaal, and patience, Dutch patience, whereas that goes against English impatience. There's always that desire in the English Premier League to get the ball forward quickly and to get after teams quickly, and we don't quite see that. And I think in the Premier League, I saw a stat at the weekend saying that Manchester United have more passes than any other team just now before they turn it into a shot. So, yeah, that is an issue and it has to be corrected. But the criticism for me is still a little too heavy.
We're expecting the PSV fans to have a show of solidarity or a show of support for Luke Shaw this evening. Obviously, you know, the injury he suffered in the first leg, or the initial meeting between the sides this season. Van Gaal, his comments this week about Luke Shaw's attitude and, you know, perhaps the fragility of his mental state, it's a reminder and an insight into the loneliness, I think, of trying to battle back from an injury the like of which he has suffered.
Yeah, I've been in that position myself, and I think he's fed up. Those were the words that Van Gaal used. He's just fed up, and I can appreciate that, because you go through long spells of being able to do very little rehab-wise, and it's just utterly frustrating. You just want to be back out there playing again. It is a lonely time. I think initially you get that kind of wave of support and sympathy, which you can cling to, and it kind of lifts you a little bit when you're probably down most just after the injury. But then that disappears, and you go into the dressing room, wish the lads all the best on a match day, and you get a little attention, but you're pretty much kind of, you know, dismissed again, because they've got to concentrate on work, what they're doing. And, yeah, you spend a lot of time on your own, and even though you'll have people encouraging you, it's still very, very hard personally to keep going, to keep believing that everything will turn out okay. It is a very lonely time. You go through every emotion, and I'm sure Luke Shaw is feeling that at the moment. And I think Van Gaal offered him 4 days leave, four days off, to try and get away from it a little bit with PSV visiting. But he said it's up to him. He could well even turn up for the game tonight. And I'd imagine if he does, the cameras would pick him out.
It's interesting, though, the dynamic that exists within a dressing room and different dressing rooms. That, you know, we hear this talk about Jose Mourinho, that if you're injured, basically you're not on his radar, you're not in his thought process whatsoever. For Van Gaal to bring up the player, bring up the issue, you know, it is a challenge from a managerial aspect as well. How do you continue to integrate a player who's going to be on the sidelines for such a long spell and presumably, like you've touched on there, needs to feel part of the group?
Yeah, well, you don't. I mean, the reality of it is you're not going to be involved until you're fully fit again. I think when Van Gaal touched on it, he was asked about retribution, potential retribution. I think that's how the subject arose in yesterday's press conference, and he dismissed that. He said, look, my players are not going to get involved that way. Moreno was the guy who made the challenge. I didn't think it was the greatest challenge. I thought it was a little reckless. Not that I'm saying he intended to do what he did to Luke Shaw, but it worked out as it did. For Luke Shaw now, nothing will make him feel part of it again until he's actually out there wearing the shirt and getting about his business again. And I wish him well in that regard. I was unfortunate, if I can go back to my time and take it to myself. I suffered another injury, a knee injury on the other leg, which knocked me for six. And that's what I ended up retiring over. I certainly hope that isn't the case for Luke Shaw. You often get that from a long-term injury. Something else goes, or a few things can go on the way back. Weight-bearing issues, etc. So I just hope Luke Shaw gets a good run at it, and before too long, he'll have it all behind him, and he'll be out there being a very good left-back again.
Just so we'll move on and talk about the other game of note tonight. You obviously, you're touching it there. You expect United to get the result there tonight. Man City away to Juve tonight, Jim. Mangala, Zabaleta, Kompany, Nasri, Silva, Boney, all out. A win would see them secure top spot in the group and top seedings for the initial stage of the knockout phase. With those players absent, how big a challenge is it to go to Turin and get a result?
Well, particularly after the weekend, I think it's a bigger challenge again, because I think Liverpool made Manchester City look below average at the weekend. And it wasn't just Liverpool in the closing down. Liverpool played some very good football as well. But Manchester City were abject. They were very, very poor with their passing. And defensively, they looked very uneasy about things at the weekend. So I would have thought Manchester City with a full-strength side could go there and win in Turin. Now, I would be inclined to lean towards Juventus, who I know are not having the greatest domestic season after being so successful recently. But, I would be inclined to lean towards the home side tonight, considering City's absentees.
Jim, enjoy the game tonight. Thanks for your time.
Cheers, Damien.
Get your game face on.
Game on 2FM.
And you're very welcome back to the programme. 51552 at Game on 2FM. This is Damien O'Mara in for Hugh Cahill in the company of Alan Colley. If only we could broadcast the chat we just had during the outbreak. Ed in Waterford to 51552 on Seb Coe saying his old friend Steve Ovette must be delirious and delighted at Lord Coe's troubles. Possibly. If you don't know the history of Steve Ovette and Seb Coe,
it was good. That was a proper rivalry.
That was a proper rivalry. They hated each other.
Yeah.
You know?
That was proper. Yeah. I'm sure Ed is bang on. Steve Ovette's at home laughing.
We should try and get Steve Ovette on the programme next week, lads. They're not even listening. Look at them. They're probably there looking at fantasy football or something. We're going to talk about diving.
Okay. I'm quite comfortable with that.
Not in a football sense. Have you ever dived?
Once.
Like off a springboard?
It wasn't
really.
Oh, the proper diving.
Oh, sure. You're talking about like diving in football?
Yeah, I never dived. Like, there's a difference in actually diving and if you're in a situation where you get clipped and you go down easy.
Yeah.
So there's an actual different...
So diving is no contact, like swan dive.
Yeah, yeah, proper jumping on the ground, absolutely no contact. But if you get clipped...
And you go down.
If you get clipped, you're entitled to go down, in my opinion.
I'm talking about diving with the Speedos in the swimming pool, 10-metre board.
Never, I can't swim.
What?
I can't swim.
Right, lads.
There's a revelation for you.
There's a challenge for the programme. You can't swim either. Right, can we do this on the programme where over the course of a number of weeks, you and JJ have to learn how to swim?
I would love to.
There we go. Right, there we'll
do it. I can't swim. I would absolutely love to.
We'll do a challenge.
If there's anybody listening, a swimming coach or a swimming trainer, and would be happy
to teach
me and JJ.
We'll not do that for the programme. Yeah, there we go.
I would, yeah, 100%. Right. It's the only, yeah, as much as I love sport, as you know, every sport, can't swim.
And would you get into a swimming pool?
I'd get in, yeah.
With the kids, like?
In the baby pool.
Would you?
I get in the pool,
but come here, how does a man who grew up in Sligo never have experience of swimming?
And my dad was a good swimmer and used to bring me every, and I just had no interest whatsoever.
Okay.
And I had a bit of a fright then as well, and kind of a bit fear.
It's game over, ball burst.
But no, I actually am willing and would love to.
They tried to get me a couple of years ago to do a thing for a programme where I was going to train to run a marathon over the course of 12 months, and it never materialised.
Did you ever play football?
Well, I did, yeah. I dislocated my knee when I was 16. That was the end of that.
I'm trying to picture.
I've bad knees.
Do you?
Yeah. No, I was never great, but I played.
Did you never tried to play after that?
No.
Once the damage was done?
No, I lost interest.
Or any sport?
Developed other interests.
And did you do the... did you ever do that for the marathon training? No.
I'd like to get fit. Anyway, with golf, men's hockey already confirmed, and of course the possibility of sevens, rugby being in Rio next year from an Irish perspective, Team Ireland for the Olympic Games is already looking to be the most diverse, possibly, well, almost certainly the biggest team ever sent to an Olympic Games. And our next guest tonight is the man who is hoping to be bouncing off springboards in the sport of diving. Oliver Dingley won bronze for England in the Commonwealth Games in Glasgow last year. He has since declared for Ireland, and we will hear the reasons why in just a minute, and is hoping to be Rio bound next year. Let's hear from the man himself. First and foremost, congratulations, Arode, in light of Irish Open success very recently. Gold in the 1 metre and 3 metre men's springboard, beating Tom Daly in the process. So that a championship that can be looked back upon very, very fondly.
Thank you very much. Here's my first event as an actual Irish diver. So a good one to get off the mark. It's up against some good competition. First competition of the season for me. A very long season ahead. So it was a very nice way to start with a silver and a gold medal.
And I presume, like any sport, you've had probably an extensive pre-season behind you, so it's probably good to get all that under your belt and actually get out competing.
Yeah, I actually had a bit of bad luck going at the end of last season. I managed to injure my ankle. So I've actually been out for really the past 4 months. I managed to tear a ligament and a few tendons. So it's been a very frustrating time. And I'm still in a bit of pain. So 2 weeks before the actual event, I didn't really know if I'd be competing or not. So just to be stood there on that diving board was a good relief. And to get the results as well was a real bonus. So hopefully I can carry on that form. And so my pre-season's been a bit up and down. But you take it as it comes and you just have to modify it after rounds. And I'm kind of hitting the big bulk of competitions coming up soon. So looking forward to going into them.
And is this all building towards potential involvement at Rio next summer?
Yeah, my trials for the Olympic Games are actually in February, and they're also in Rio. So it'll be a nice trip. They're in February, and I have a very busy winter schedule ahead. And the big ones are in Rio in February, and from there I'll then go on to the Olympic Games.
And that is the primary goal for this season, I'd imagine. Like so many athletes, you want to be you want to be there in Rio next year with the you know the five rings on your singlet.
Oh, it's every athlete's dream, and to go and be on some of that diving board. I'll be the first Irish diver in 68 years. So it'll be a huge honour. The last diver was a diver called Eddie Herron 68 years ago. So the island hasn't had a diver. So it'll be nice to hopefully be that first one.
Just on the growth of the sport, that you talked there about us not having a diver, a large part of that, I'd imagine, is down to a lack of facilities. So are we in the potential of the early days of maybe a glorious era for Irish diving because of the National Aquatic Centre and what facilities you have available to yourself now in Abbottstown?
I think so. There's actually only one diving pool in the whole of Ireland. So unfortunately, that's a shame. But I think diving will get more and more popular. The sport will evolve. Hopefully more funding will come into the sport. If we get great results at the Olympics, there's no reason why we can't. The interest will start to spike. Both south and north of the border. There's two pools in north of the border in Northern Ireland. And so it's the sport is growing. And with the coverage of the Olympics, and it has been a very minority sport. But in the UK, for example, with Tom Daley, diving was a very minority sport. And now it's actually become quite a prime sport. So hopefully we'll be able to get some of that success too.
And can I ask you, and I don't mean this to be an ignorant question, and maybe I'm falling into the reality TV age, but even programmes like Splash, it probably opens the sport up to so many people who would never have seen it, never have thought that, you know, there's something I can go to my local swimming pool or local leisure centre and give a shot.
Splash was a huge, huge test for the sport. I think more people started diving in the UK after Splash than they did after the Olympics. So reality TV, it does help.
Now, for the discerning listeners, they will know that it's not necessarily an Irish twang to your accent. So how does a man from Harrogate come to be competing for Ireland and hoping to represent this country at the Olympics?
So I qualified through my Irish heritage from my grandma. She was born down near Cork City. I'm actually on a place called Spike Island she lived. It's actually a prison island, but there's a small hamlet on there, and she grew up there. So I actually made the switch at the end of the 2014 season. Unfortunately, I had some very unlucky decisions against me, especially in 2012 when I was 19. I came second at the Olympic trials for Great Britain, but unfortunately I wasn't selected. Mm. It was absolutely heartbreaking for any athlete not to be able to go to the Olympic Games. And it isn't just for the athlete, it's everyone around you, your coach, your family, the support staff, everyone who's worked with you. And I actually finished on a very good 2014, competing at the Commonwealth Games, and I made my decision after then. And it was a big decision to make, a very big career decision, and one I'm extremely proud to make. And to be able to represent Ireland, my heritage, I was always very proud to represent any part of my heritage. So I think it was a very, very good decision. And Swim Ireland, and everyone from Ireland who I've spoken to has been very open to the idea and very welcoming. So I've been here, living here for over a year now. And I actually live at the National Sports Campus, train at the National Aquatic Centre. And it's been a long, tough journey. And I'm very, very proud to be able to represent Ireland. And hopefully I'll be stood there on the board in the Olympics and with the green, orange and white on my trunk.
And I guarantee you, wherever you're competing for Ireland, you'll be cheered on. But it's you talk about it there.
Oh, thank you.
It's a massive step to make. You're 22 years of age.
23 as of yesterday, actually.
Oh, well, there you go. Well, happy birthday, 23 as of yesterday. But a big,
thank you very much.
A big step to take, but not just for you, but you mentioned there your support structure. Like, I'm right in saying your coach has moved over here as well.
Yeah, so my coach followed me over, which was, for me, an absolute huge bonus. It was a huge boost, as in someone, my coach, who'd been my coach since I was 8 years old, believed that I could go to the Olympics. And it's also his dream to go to the Olympics too as a coach. And to be able to go do that as a pair is absolutely amazing. And he took on the head coaching job in Ireland for diving. And he also coaches a few other divers. And there's some very good divers in Ireland as well who are very up and coming. So I think when we go into Tokyo, we'll have a bigger team. And then 2024, I reckon diving will be right up there.
But he's worked with you since you were, what, 8 or 9?
Eight years old, yes.
So like, that's a remarkable relationship. Like, he has known you for the vast amount of your life. He probably knows you better than maybe you even know yourself.
Yeah, no, very, very true. We have a great relationship. We have our highs, we have our lows. It's all part of the journey, and I'm very lucky I'm able to share that with someone who I'm very close with.
Now, talk me through your own disciplines. What height are you dealing with? What can we expect to see if we're to follow your progress over the next couple of months towards Rio, hopefully?
So my main events are the 3-metre springboard and the 1-metre springboard. They're the bouncy ones. I don't do the 10-metre platform. I get a bit too scared for those. It's a bit too high for me. So I stick to the lower ones. So in my event, you'd hit your peak at about 25, 26. So I'll be 23 going into Rio and 27 for Tokyo. So kind of perfect ages either side of that. Hopefully I'll have a nice long career. It's a very physical sport, is springboard diving. You fit the same amount of somersaults as you do on a 10-metre, just a bit lower down. So it's a very demanding sport, but one I absolutely love doing, and I'm very lucky to be able to do it full-time.
So how far out now would you be developing routines and developing, you know, what it is you're going to compete at? Like, do you tailor something now for the potential to be in Rio next year, or do you slowly shake it up over the course of the next couple of months?
Well, because of we actually had our dives. Well, we have a plan. We have an A plan, a B plan, a C plan. If all else fails, we have a D plan. And the A plan is to go with my very, very hardest dives. But unfortunately, because of the injury I suffered, the ankle isn't quite right yet. So hopefully by the time February comes around, I'll be able to do my hardest dives, which include dives like a forward 4.5 somersaults, which is you throw and hold on for your life, really. Mm. So I'll be doing I'm competing a few easier dives at the moment, but I'm slowly putting those hard dives back into my list. So it's all very tactical as well. Whether you do an easier list just to get through, because you only get one chance in diving to qualify for the Olympics, and that's at the World Cup, which is the event in February. So consistency is the key. So you could either go for the easier dives, which you can do, you have to consistently do very well, or you could maybe risk it and do a harder dive, and hopefully it pays off. So it's very tactical, and yeah. You only get one chance at each dive. So it's quite nerve-wracking as well, but it's such a good sport, and I'm very lucky to be able to do it.
Yeah, I'd be of the opinion now, slow and steady wins the race, so none of that, you know, risky stuff to jeopardise it all.
If you want to go win, then you've got to go all out.
But then, granted, I'm not a man who's going to get up on a 3-metre board and do what you do. I'm sure it's a question you get asked time and time again. What sort of injuries have you picked up over the years, aside from, you know, the ligaments and maybe the wear and tear on your joints?
They're probably actually the worst ones I've had. Diving, it does come across as a very dangerous sport, but if done properly, it's not that dangerous at all. And I've picked up a few smacks here and there over the years, and something you kind of learn to. It's part of the training, really. Really, ligament injuries, such as my ankle one, which I didn't even do diving, it's never the sport. It's always something outside of the sport. They're really the worst injuries I've actually had.
It wasn't like Rory McIlroy with a 5-a-side football match or anything now, was it?
No, not quite, no.
Okay, great. It's one of those sports that we will probably largely get glued to it, like the gymnastics and diving and sports that you wouldn't watch for 11 months of the year. You get obsessed with over the course of the Olympics. If people want to get involved, is it the type of thing that you need to get into young in order to have that maybe 16 years of experience to get to an Olympics?
No, I wouldn't say so. For me personally, I did get into it young, and it was sport was always just a way to kind of go into my own bubble and enjoy something kind of outside school and something I could make friends and stuff. But you do see a lot of very good athletes kind of starting the sport at 15, 14. You even get to there's masters classes where any age, the age of 16, come to dive. It's great watching them. So you do see a wide variety of ages, and it's good to see. And anyone can actually do the sport. Mm. So it really is a good one. Good fun one to try. And you make, like any sport, you make friends there. It's also a daring sport as well, so it adds that extra fun element to it as well. So it's a good one. So I don't necessarily think you have to be very young to start. Yeah. But it's a sport anyone could do.
You know, we talk a lot about talent identification. Would we be looking at, like, a good swimmer isn't necessarily going to make a good diver, but a good gymnast could make a good diver? Is that a fair way?
Very true, yeah. Now, the thing with gymnasts and sports is that their bodies are already conditioned. So when you kind of transfer that into diving, it does help. But I think that the biggest aspect is just hard work. Not necessarily talent. I think if you have a hard work ethic with a lot of things, you'll go a lot further and succeed.
And probably helps if you're a bit of an adrenaline junkie.
Of course, as well. Yeah, no, that does help as well.
Just to finish, obviously, you know, it's not cheap to compete in these competitions. It's not cheap to try and put in the training and everything that's required to compete at the level that you compete at, and certainly hope to compete at next year. You have a Pledge Sports page if people want to get involved. How can they do so?
I do. All you have to do is go to pledgesports.ie and type in Oliver Dingley, and my profile will be there. It's like for a lot of athletes, trying to make a full-time living out of a sport which isn't necessarily a high-paid sport is always quite tough. And to compete at the highest level, There's a lot of money having to go into that, and so any help really does help, and it does help me benefit my diving, and it's also the support access. Just knowing people are there who are supporting me on my journey to Rio and beyond is a really nice feeling. So any help is appreciated. Like I said, you've got to go to Pledge Sports on the website and just type in my name.
Yeah, and it's Dingley, D-I-N-G-L-E-Y, and I know people can find you on Twitter as well. You've a Commonwealth medal in your locker already, so, you know... It's real. Like, I don't want people listening to this thinking, I hear some lunatic who thinks he can go and dive for Ireland in the Olympics next year, that this is a realistic ambition and one that you can certainly achieve, but it needs a little bit of help along the way. So hopefully
of course, thank you.
Play a part in that. Oliver, wish you continued success. Thank you very much for your time, and we will chat no doubt between now and the Olympic Games next year. Good to talk
to you. Thank you for having me. I appreciate that. Thank you.
Game on 2FM.
And we will finish the programme with racing, where there was considerable success for Gordon Elliott and Navin on Sunday. A treble which included victory in the feature Troy Town Handicap Chase. That story was added to by the fact that the treble was achieved with 16-year-old Jack Kennedy in the saddle. We will hear from the Dingle teenager in just a moment. But first, let's hear from the man in charge himself, Meath-based trainer Gordon Elliott. I suppose very, very simple. A great weekend for you to reflect upon.
I thought we had a chance or two going to Navan on Sunday. Obviously, it's our local race course and a lot of big races on. But our day didn't start off well. Calgary Hill got bet, and I just thought it was going to be one of them days. But look, it was a dream come true. It ended up being class, you know. Great day.
And then, obviously, the pick of the wins, Riverside City, the 8-1 winner of the Troy Town, which, you know, a race of significant standing and history within Irish racing.
Exactly. It's one of the big handicap chases of the year. And it was nice to win it, and it was only Jack's fourth or fifth ride over fences, and to win a tri-town chase, it was great, you know.
Overall, for a trainer like yourself who has done as much as you've done in the game, are trebles, things like that, are they more media-driven, or is it important for you to walk away with a milestone like that on a day like Sunday?
Look, I mean, we've had plenty of trebles before and a few four-timers, but the train winners and the big days, they're the days that matter. Everyone knows tri-town chases, you know, big grade C handicap hurdles. You know, that makes it extra special, and especially when it's our local track, you know.
Mm. Does that add to the nerves a little bit?
No, it doesn't, to be honest. Every day we go racing, it's the same, but it just makes it a little bit sweeter, you know.
Now, talk to me a little bit about Jack, because, you know, racing fans, the diehards, will be familiar with the name he is making for himself. But for a lot of people, he really burst onto the scene with that treble on Sunday.
Yeah, Jack's with me now, I suppose, for 7 or 8 months. He's only 16 years of age. He was champion pony race rider on 2 or 3 different occasions. And he's a name we're going to hear a lot more of. He's still as young and has a lot to learn, but he's doing everything right. I think he's 21 jump winners road this season already, and 8 flat winners. So for a lad of only 16, he's not 17, I think, till next April. It's amazing what he's doing, so hopefully he can just keep going upwards and onwards, you know.
Is that a big step for you to put so much faith in such a young man?
Listen, I'm very lucky that I've got a lot of jockeys around me, and always good jockeys riding for me. And as much as you do have to put your head out for them, Jack is stepping up to the task. So as long as he keeps improving and keep doing what he's doing, he's going to have no problem, you know.
And you have to keep him grounded then along the way as well.
Exactly, he's steady away, lad, and he's only 16, so hopefully it'll be upwards and onwards.
And the man Gordon's making reference to there, Jack, is with us as well. Jack, how are you?
Good, now yourself?
Not too bad at all. Brilliant day for you on Sunday. Must have exceeded all the expectation.
Yeah, brilliant. It was a dream come true. It was my first winner over fences as well, so it was nice to do it in a big race.
Did you go to Navan with the expectation that it was going to be a special day?
Well, I was more hopeful than expecting it. I knew he'd run a good race, but I wasn't really expecting anything too much, but I was hopeful, all right.
Yeah, so obviously we've talked to Gordon a bit about Riverside City, but for you, Baroque style in the 140, Prince of Scars then in the Proudstown Handicap Hurdle.
Is it
a big milestone for a jockey to get that first treble off your back? Is it like a striker going and getting his first hat-trick?
Yeah, it is. It's very special. I was very lucky to be riding three nice horses on the day, and it all worked out well, so I was very lucky.
It's been a phenomenal move from the amateur ranks to the professional ranks.
Yeah, it has. It's a lot different. It's a lot different moving on to the bigger tracks, and you're riding against a lot better riders. So it was a big change, all right, but definitely a change for the better. And yeah.
What is it like when you go into the jockey's room in advance? Is there much camaraderie between the lads? Do people take you aside and put an arm around your shoulder and help you along the way?
Yeah, there's plenty of camaraderie. Everyone's friends in the way room, but once you go out for a race, then it's kind of every man for themselves, you know.
And I'd imagine, like all jockeys, this has been a lifelong ambition of yours to be a professional, to be riding the big winners on the big days.
Yeah, I always knew from a young age I wanted to be a jockey, so it's nice to be riding and riding winners. I'm delighted with the way it's going, just hopefully I can keep improving anyway.
Do you set yourself goals, or is it just one week at a time?
Not really, I don't try to set too much goals, just I'd like to try and keep improving and learn as much as I can, that's all I really aim for.
So what's next then in the diary, what are you looking forward to, or where's the next winner you're going to chase?
I'm not sure, I just take every day as it comes. I've four nice rides as well tomorrow, so we'll see how that goes, and we'll move on to the next day then again.
What do your mates think of all this?
I'm not too sure, to be honest. I'm sure the lads at home, they wouldn't really know many jockeys or anything, so I'm sure they think it's good enough, but they're a great bunch.
Yeah, but like presumably they're all, 16, 17, they're probably just finished the junior cert, starting into transition year or fifth year, and there's you making the back pages of all the papers on Monday morning for riding winners. It's a strange scenario.
Yeah, it is. It's great. All the lads there at home, they'd all be more into their football, so it'll be something different anyway.
And it's been a big transition for you, even, you know, people that follow the sport will know you're a Dingle native, so you've had to uproot yourself and move closer to Dublin, move out to County Meath, so you're probably adapting to all that still.
Yeah, I am, yeah. I don't find it too hard being away from home. It's a lot easier being away from home when you're doing something you love anyway, it makes it a lot easier.
It's really Roy the Rover stuff, Gordon, isn't it?
Yeah, this is great. It's obviously a bit of a roller coaster for Jack, so hopefully he can keep it up, you know.
Just a word on yourself. It's been a great couple of months. Everything seems to be going your way. The winners keep rolling in.
Yeah, I think we've nearly 90 jump winners this season already between England and Ireland, so if we get the 100 before Christmas, it'll be great. But we can't complain. It's a very, very lucky position. They have a lot of good horses and brilliant staff, so I can't complain, you know.
And while a lot of us might be looking forward to, you know, winding down and having a few days off to reflect around Christmas in a couple of weeks' time, it's probably flat out for you at this stage, isn't it, over the Christmas meetings, and, you know, we've got Cheltenham not too far down the road as well.
Yeah, listen, Christmas will be very busy for us, but as Jack said, when you're doing something you like, it's an awful lot easier.
Yeah, a lot of talk already, Don Cossack for the King George of Kempton, would that be the big one in the diary?
That's, I suppose, our next big engagement. We're looking forward to that now. You know, Christmas is 5 or 6 weeks away, so that's the plan.
Yeah, and Fairy House this weekend, you'll have a couple of good runners in that.
Yeah, we'll have 10 or 15 runners, I suppose, for the 2 days, so all up in the air, a little bit exactly where everything's going, but we'll have loads of runners, please God.
Brilliant. Gordon, wish you well with the rest of the year ahead. Thanks for joining us.
Thanks, bye-bye.
Gordon Elliott, Jack Kennedy joining us there. PSG 1-0 up on Malmo. Astana, Benfica finished 2-2 earlier. Wolfsburg beat CSKA Moscow 2-0. Text in on the swimming. I can help teach swimming from Hook. Thank you, Captain.
Brilliant.
We will be in touch. Alan, thank you. Thank you, JJ. Pleasure, thank you, Damien. Andrew. Louise is on the way. Chris and Kira after 10. Good luck.